Welcome to the latest edition of
He Said,
She Said. We are going to maybe give you a little bit of a flashback to our very first ever episode of the podcast, where we did a deep dive into the Academy Awards.
Do you remember how much I was in love with Bradley Cooper last year?
Do you remember that you had 4 pages of handwritten notes about women's dresses?
I do. I'm thinking about it now because
it was a really long podcast. You really dove deep on the Academy Awards.
Yeah, and people are like,
wow, we didn't know Peter
loved Bradley Cooper that much.
And yeah.
We went like 10 minutes politics, 40 minutes Star Is Born.
An hour and a half on the red carpet.
Yeah, we went crazy on that. And that people were getting, wow. And I guess, I know it's not a year because award season was shorter. We're coming up. We're going to have to do a year-long anniversary special on He Said, She Said. That's going to be one heck of a party.
The first episode dropped on my birthday last year.
Did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
what day is that?
I mean, if you don't already have the birthday present plans, you're in trouble.
Hold on. Let me call David Santos
at Diamonds Direct and get something working.
And see if they've run out of diamonds down there. Okay. So your favorite movie last night won. You're a big proponent of Parasite. You've seen that movie how many times?
Not a one. And I never will.
And so you were disappointed that your other favorite movies didn't win, which is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and 1917.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Oh, and The Irishman, because I have 100 hours to watch these things. I mean, let me tell you, my favorite part was when Al Pacino went to Brad Pitt and said, hey, let's go to war in 1917.
Right.
And then they got a Parasite.
And directed by Quentin Tarantino.
And everybody died. Did I get it right?
Right. That's it.
The only nominated film that I watched was Frozen 2, I think. Maybe.
Well, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, it
was. It was nominated for a song.
For a song. It wasn't even. Which is one of the first big injustices.
Yeah, how was it not nominated for best animated film?
There were these
Toy Story 4. Yeah,
I did see that one. I don't understand
how they got in over Frozen. I'm very confused by that.
Frozen 2 was beautiful.
I mean, beautiful. And it was so much better than Frozen.
Yeah, as
the first
story.
One.
Yes.
Yeah, it just, injustices all around. I also want to know that I have a big issue with the fact that I'm happy Parasite won. It's a film I'll never watch, but that's okay.
All right. Should we talk about that you'll never watch it and why you'll never watch it? Is it just because it's subtitles?
Yeah, I'm not going to read subtitles. Dub it over in English and I'll watch it all day long. I love foreign. I watch so many Spanish movies and French television shows that have been dubbed over in English and I'll do it. But it's not even that. It's not even the subtitles, actually. It's just not for me.
You don't like sinister movies.
I don't like sinister. I don't like dark. I'm out.
The movie itself, the title itself.
I don't like Parasites.
Right.
Yeah. So it's out. Like, I spend my whole life trying to avoid Parasites. Right. I'm not watching a movie that's called Parasite.
It's done.
So you've lost me.
It's done at the first.
Yeah.
Just a terrible.
I mean, because I probably would read subtitles, like a great French film. I would read subtitles on probably. But,
so you're biased towards Europe over South Korea.
No, I'm not. That's not what I was saying. That's just what you're saying. It's just called Parasite.
I will say I'm so happy.
But can I go back to my original point before you?
Yes, yes. Go ahead.
I'm thrilled Parasite won Best Picture. I just want to know how. I just don't think it should have been eligible for two separate Best Picture wins. Like, I don't think it should have been Best Picture International Film category and Best Picture category. Because quite honestly, once Parasite made it into Best Picture category, we all knew then that there was no way any of the other international films were going to win because none of those made it into Best Picture contention. And so wouldn't it have been nice for the other international films in that category for one of them to have the shot to win so it could get elevated? Because isn't that the whole point of that category, to elevate our exposure to international films? Because Parasite we already knew it was the best international film of the year. It was nominated for Best Picture overall, period. Right?
I mean, if you're nominated for Best Picture and you're the only one in the category of international film, but then All right, so there's no way. All right.
Yeah,
let's reverse that.
We've never had it happen before, so we're just thinking through the rules, babe.
Let's reverse that, though. All right, so if it was nominated and it's the only international film in the Best Picture category, but it's not in the international film category, but something else wins, then we all know that the second film really wasn't the best international film. It was the...
We know that. No one's pretending like it's not.
It won the NIT.
Okay. Has there ever been an animated film that was nominated for Best Picture?
Beauty and the Beast.
Did Beauty and... Was it also nominated for Best Animated Feature?
I don't even know. Yes. I think it
was. Was it?
Yes.
We need to go back and look, because just see, and then there's the precedent, and then just problem solved. We should have done that last night while you had your little weird plastic desk.
I have a TV tray. It's one of the things I've added.
Yeah, he's got a TV tray he rolls out so he can...
I'm an 80-year-old man.
Because you guys need his tweets. He has to have his laptop because you need his witty commentary on Twitter live.
People love my live tweets from the Academy Awards.
They
I don't
do.
Know what you're talking about.
They do.
Love...
So let's talk about the real, like, most
Hold
winning
on.
Moment.
I'm not done with Parasite.
Okay, go back to Parasite.
Because I have a larger point, which is I'm so excited
you
for
like
this
Parasites?
Country. Oh, I... Well, I'm so excited for this country to be embracing Korean culture. And I definitely, it is, you know, this is one of these things where I don't understand why we're not doing it more. You know, South Korea is a democracy. It's so technologically advanced. It has been a great ally to us since the Korean War, obviously. The food and the culture from it is going to be, I think, you know, it's omnipresent in the West Coast. You know, I wish it would permeate throughout, you know, the rest of our culture the way, I don't know, Chinese and Japanese culture have. And so if that's what this does, if that's what it has to do to make that happen, that's what's going to be great. You know, people who know movies knew that this movie was very special. You know, Boone had a shout out to Quentin Tarantino, that, you know, he was the only person that had been flagging his movies for years. It was just a great movie. I actually liked Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That was my favorite movie.
That is actually on my list to watch. I just haven't got around to it yet, because how many hours do I need for that one?
It's a good 2.5-3 hours. And it is in some place. I mean, there are just some parts of it that are, they're just driving around Los Angeles, getting from place to place. But in that, there is some beauty just in seeing, and I'm glad it had won for production value last night. The thing I liked about the Academy Awards last night was that it seemed like almost everything except The Irishman, which everybody thought in November was going to win, everybody got a little taste of everything. So, you know, Jojo Rabbit got Best Original Screenplay. There was some visual and technical awards that went to 1917. Obviously, Parasite picked up the big awards. Little Women, I don't think, picked up anything. And so, other than Irishman and I think Little Women, it was relatively spread. There was a lot to go around last night. Everybody picked up, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood picked up a couple, obviously, with Brad Pitt winning, which was...
That was,
you know, very good.
That was a great moment.
The Joker picks up for best actor. Marriage Story, which just, that's the one movie
we're never going to watch that.
I can't watch that.
I mean, that just looks like torture.
That looks like Kramer versus Kramer 30 years from now, where it's just going to make us uncomfortable. Maybe, God forbid, I don't,
no.
Nothing's, yeah.
No, no, we're good. We
the
don't
way
need
he
that.
Yells at Scarlett Johansson makes me uncomfortable. Like that scene that they kept showing where he's like,
no one will yell at me.
I
that
want
way ever.
You to be dead or whatever. I'm like, God, he's worse than when he's Kylo Ren.
What would I say if you said that? What would I be?
I don't want to tell the world how we fight other than you take my computers away from me and you don't turn off the lights, which is amazing because
I don't do that. That's so old. I
but
just,
we haven't been,
I
we
just,
haven't
I
gotten into
like,
a fight
no,
in a
I
long
know.
Time.
Exactly. But if you ever spoke to me that way, you'd be like, Get the F out and don't ever speak to me again. Like, this is it. Done. Like, no one's gonna... I wish you were dead.
Yeah.
Like, movie over. Like, there's no Marriage Story there. Move
well,
on.
Well, are they... Oh, I don't even...
I don't even know.
We might have to watch it.
Nope, I'm not watching it. Because, again, that follows... It falls into my I don't really like to let darkness in roll. Did you watch Little Women?
No.
So someone who watched like most of the bizarre foreign language short films couldn't be bothered to watch Little Women.
Because I know the story. I've seen that movie 17 times. There's an animated version. I mean, it's just like, I don't like, first of all, I don't like any of those period pieces. I don't like Jane Eyre. I don't like, I don't care for, you know, Cider House Rules, which is
it's not Cider House Rules.
Not a period piece, but it's just
yeah,
like,
I'm just like, what are you?
But don't say I'm not woke because I watch Fleabag. I mean, so.
Oh, I'm so glad you watched Fleabag.
I watched
You're
Killing
not allowed
Eve.
To say woke. I learned that the other day.
Really?
White people are not allowed to say woke.
Really?
Yeah.
I've seen a lot.
But you're not supposed to.
How can, woke is not about.
I'm just letting you know. That's what I learned from one of my other like pop culture-y things. They had a woke off and basically, yeah.
We are going to get into this because it's basically.
And I don't pretend to be woke because I know better than to use the word, but.
Well, I want to get into this at some point because not.
You should really watch the latest episode of The Bold Type. The terrible television show that explores these issues pretty deeply. And you would maybe appreciate that one.
Michelle and I were talking about this last night. We find ourselves in the center. We are both avowed centrists. We're both moderates. I mean, our leading presidential candidates are Joe Biden and Michael Bloomberg. We basically want a moderate presidential candidate, you know, and it's who we've. It's why Michelle loved Charlie. It's why I like DeSantis. You know, it's just we are moderates. And we find ourselves in a tricky position because to our Republican friends, we are condescending. Like to my buddy Alan Suskey, you know, he hates hearing me talk about, you know, left stuff. And he'll purposely send me Trump memes, et cetera, to jam it in my face. And then on the left side, we are not pure enough.
No, I'm not a communist, so I don't belong there.
We are not, we are just not, like, we've talked about it. You were, you know, we get into trouble for supporting people like Jeff Brandis or Rick Baker or other, you know, forward-thinking Republicans. People don't like that, you know, the fact that we supported, you know, DeSantis over Gillum. And it's just like, so we're, and but here's what I thought about when I was going to write about that. I thought about this morning. Isn't being a centrist in and of itself a privileged position? The fact that we get to choose. Whereas if you are part of the, I don't know, maybe the, if you are in the middle part of America and you're in the lower economic socio environment, you are going to be almost default Trumpian. And if you are in the cities, you are going to be almost default Democrat. And so we get this, like, we get this luxury of picking our political views, whereas people, they don't get to make educational choices that we get to make. And so they have to back public schools. And therefore, if you're backing public schools, you're almost by default going to be aligned with Democrats. And so, I don't know, I'm playing with this like theory right now that being a centrist in and of itself is a privileged position. Am I being overly, I don't know, am I playing too much with it?
You might be playing too much with it. I don't know. I don't necessarily disagree with you because I was thinking about it. I've been thinking about it a lot because I've been trying to figure out how it is that I was so hard right, like so far right leaning when I was younger, to the point where, you know, I would be knocking on doors for the party in July of an off year registering Republican voters. You know, I mean, I can't believe that I used to do that, but I believed so strongly that that's what I did. And I don't know what it is. I can't just be marriage and motherhood that has shifted me more to the center.
I wrote about it right after about how fatherhood was shifting my politics.
Yeah.
And I don't think that would be, I think number one, you and I are globalists. I mean, whether or not we want to agree to it or not.
No, we absolutely are globalists.
We are globalists. We enjoy.
One of the things that's like the biggest priority for me as a parent is making sure that our child is a globalist. I don't want her to ever live in a, you know, live in a worldview where it's just America first and that's all there is.
I do, but I do believe America is exceptional. I mean, absolutely. I believe the American democratic experience.
I believed in American exceptionalism long before Marco Rubio made it a tagline.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also believe in European culture.
I also believe that America has always been great. I don't think that we need to make it great again because it never stopped being great. I think it's possible to be a globalist and still love your country and believe in the strength of the country. And you know that I believe in, you know, I believe in our Constitution. I believe in the country that our founding fathers created. I really do. That's one of the only things that gives me comfort in this very tumultuous time is that, you know, I do believe that we will steer our way out of this storm.
Well, speaking of that, there's a great couple of essays. What do you think? I mean, I know where you're at on this, but it's like, will history remember Mitt Romney? Will that be the only, like, there's a great essay by McKay Coppins for The Atlantic that maybe the only thing that we will remember.
That will be the only thing we remember Romney for. Is that?
Well, I don't know.
Don't you think?
I think the only thing that we will remember out of the Republican reaction to impeachment will be Romney. I don't think that that's the only thing. We will remember him for running for president.
No, because you don't really, people don't teach about the people who lost that often in American history class. I mean, you don't. Ella is not going to be.
I think he'll
writing
be
a report on Mitt Romney running for president of the United States now. Ella very well could be writing a report on the impeachment and how Mitt Romney was the only Republican to stand up for principle.
I think Romney will go down. I think that Romney will go down in the same category as some of the other great non-presidential political figures of history, like a Williams Jennings Bryant or a Daniel Webster or some people that aspired for the presidency, did not win it, but still are in the pantheon of great Americans at that, like right at that second level. Like he will be in the same way we think about, I don't want to put him at the same level as Ted Kennedy, but in that same pantheon that he will go down as, you know, the standard bearer of Republicanism before it devolved into Trumpianism, that he will, you know, having saved the Olympics, having been a governor. I think that he will be the poster child for the Republican struggle.
I still
with
would,
its reaction to Trumpism.
I would still be a Republican if the Republican Party was the Mitt Romney Republican Party at this point.
Well,
you know?
if Charlie Crist had not screwed him and endorsed McCain, as we saw in the Mitt documentary.
Oh, please.
Still the most devastating.
I know. I mean, that is the most devastating moment.
We have a great podcast lined up. We do have Joe Gruters. We do have Kathleen Pasadoma. And we do have Alia Faraj Johnson. Give us a few more moments on Oscars. But first, we are going to break from a word from our sponsors, which if you're not on Predict It right now, if you're not playing
on Predict It right now.
I bought up. I did a little pump and dump on Amy Klobuchar last week. I bought her at a penny. I sold her at 3 cents. So I tripled my money on like $2.50. I bought a bunch of her stock because she, in the moments that she won the first spring seats out of Florida. And so
Florida?
Yeah, because there were satellite caucuses in Iowa, in St. Pete, actually. There were four in Florida and she won them. And I'm like, wait a second, she's going to be in the upset. Other people saw it. And so I bought her at 1 cent. She got up to 3 or 4 cents. And then as soon as the rest of the polling started coming, I started dumping her and I dumped all my shares. But I bought like $250 worth of 1 cent stock. So I had like 2,500 shares of her, or what is it? 20, I don't, as many shares
whatever
as possible. 25,000, or is that what that is? And so
yeah.
I just had all the Amy Klobuchar you could buy I put it out on Twitter.
That's literally never a phrase I thought I would hear you say.
And then I dumped it all. And so right now, with all that's going on, that's an advertisement. But here is the official word from our sponsors.
We all know that guy who says he knew Trump was going to win long before election night. Had he known about Predict It, he could have put his money where his mouth was and made a little extra cash in the process. Predict It is like the stock market for politics. You can buy and sell shares in future events and elections, both foreign and domestic. During the 2018 midterms, Predict It beat other national pollsters like Nate Silver in election night predictions, and it wasn't even close. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He Said, She Said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predictit.org/promo/FLAPOL.
Okay, we should probably wrap up the Academy Awards so that our segment is not longer than the actual awards themselves, right?
Well, our segment couldn't possibly be longer than the awards themselves, so...
The no-host thing has got to end. You got to have somebody...
I just want a host.
...drive that train.
I just like a host. Can I just have Steve Martin and Chris Rock?
I would take that.
It was...
Where's Billy Crystal?
Where is Billy Crystal doing his push-ups?
We just need... We need somebody to navigate. All right, so can we talk about the elephant in the room, which was
the greatest performance of all time?
Which was?
Eminem.
Oh, my God. Oh, sure, we can start there.
That wasn't the elephant in the room?
Total surprise.
Yeah, total surprise. And we later learned, like, a surprise to everyone. Even the crew didn't know. It wasn't even on the line by line.
Eminem comes in, 18 years later?
Yes.
After he...
He won Best Song. He was the only ever recipient of the Academy Award for Best Song that did not pick it up in person. And that did not perform the song. So 18 years later, he returns to the Oscar. He makes his first appearance on the Oscar stage. And performs his winning song.
Are you going to disclaim your affinity for Eminem at this point?
I think everyone knows that I love Eminem.
Ridiculously so.
I'm his target demo.
I don't know. I don't even know what to say about your affinity for Eminem, which is, please don't play him. Please.
I'm not. Oh, okay. I'm not because I don't want to mess with his copyright.
Right.
Lawyers. I don't want 50 Cent to come after you.
In a night when Oscar's so white and they are going out of their way to show how many faces of color are actually members of the Academy.
I mean, they just couldn't. I mean,
go with a white rapper who was criticized throughout his career for being the white guy you don't think that he was one of the greatest cultural appropriators of the last 20 years?
I just think that's where he grew up.
Okay. And so there's a lot of white rappers out there, right? That are successful.
He's supremely talented.
Right.
Yes.
And you don't think that, all right. So
no, he totally got criticized. Absolutely.
Right.
No one wanted the white guy in the game, but
yeah, I saw 8 Mile too.
I wasn't talking about 8 Mile.
I saw
Thanks.
8 Mile too.
Thanks. Thanks.
Directed by Curtis Hanson, who did LA Confidential. That's why I watched it.
It's a great film.
Brittany Murphy's dead. I mean, think about it. I mean, that's
so
crazy.
And we still don't know what killed her.
Oh, we don't?
No, she died of mysterious natural causes.
Such a hot scene when they make out when they bang in the factory.
In the factory.
So dirty and
so
hot.
So gross. I mean, I can't even imagine. And that's disgusting.
You go into the factory and you're working in the factory. Why don't I bang you right now?
Yeah. That's just gross. But yeah, so yes. And Oscars.
So you're against factory banging?
I'm totally against. Factory banging is a hard pass for me.
If you were from Detroit, would you have been a factory banger?
Nope. I wouldn't. Thank you. There's just no way, no how.
So you're not there. All right. So Eminem does that. Again, the audience reaction
was amazing because no one understood why it was. We didn't. No one knew that. Why he was there. The Academy never made it clear. Eminem himself tweeted out afterwards, thank you. Sorry it took me 18 years. Thanks. It's like you only get one shot. When you get a chance to right a wrong, you take it. Thanks for having me 18 years later. And he had the link to the video of Barbra Streisand presenting his award.
I would say on that note, I just talked about it for a second, the efforts to bend over backwards to project the diversity was kind of, it was so much, and you're just like, wait a second, all the movies are about old white men except for Little Women and a Parasite. We know what you're really about. Like, just because you have, you know, Billy Porter on the front end doesn't mean that you're going to go make some great, you know, movie about black folk next year. We're still going to do the same movies and the same
Chris direction. Chris Rock could get up next year and make the same exact jokes he made about not being represented this year, next year.
Well, I mean, he laughed about it. Like, I mean, we've, you know, he said, you know, we've gone 100 or, you know, 80 years and we still only have one acting nominee up there. And it's, if you are...
She was stunning, by the way. Stunning. One of my best dressed of the night.
Do you want to go to best dressed? Just because we need to get into the political. Do you want to go to just a little, a couple of names, which I thought were fantastic. Regina King. Do you remember?
Absolutely. That is how a movie star looks. She was dressed like a queen. One of Ella's favorite looks of the night.
Ella Joyce coming down with some strong opinions.
Ella Joyce had very strong opinions.
Academy Awards.
She would like all of Hollywood to know that they have a little bit of too much going on.
Yes.
She's like
yes.
Pick one. You don't need the sequins and the ruffles and the tulle and the fringe. Just pick one.
Says the child who is like, you know, rainbow stripes, rainbow.
Right. She knows that that's for children, not grownups.
It was fun having her for our first. I mean, she's been with us for.
But it's the first one she stayed up
and
for.
She paid
and,
attention.
Paid
to
attention
it.
To it, and I hated that I had to put her down at 9. But I just didn't know. 9 is past her bedtime for one, and then two. Once the television standards changed, I just didn't
know what
commercials and what she was going to get, and it was just time to go to bed. And I was sad because she missed Eminem.
Yeah, I'm not. Margaret Robbie.
Yeah, Margot. Right?
Right.
Yeah, Margot, not Margaret.
What did I say?
You said Margaret Robbie.
I'm sorry. I wrote
Isn't
that down.
Is it Margot Robbie?
Yeah, Margot Robbie. Sorry.
And I'm like, who's Margaret Robbie? I've never heard of her.
Is there a bigger star in Hollywood right now that you'd want to, like, if you're buying stock in somebody right now? Like, as in terms of the female actress that's going to dominate
over
the... If
you like blondes, that is who you would pick, yes.
I would pick her. I would say, like, she's going to have her pick over the next 5 years of anything. You liked, I think somebody who you liked was Florence Pugh. I don't know who she was, but she wore that blue cascading dress. Do you remember that one?
I have no idea who that is, okay. So I can't remember. We're forgetting, though, my favorite, my best dress of the night in the Chanel. Yeah, I didn't like her. I said she looked good for a child.
Oh,
and
okay.
I said that dress was more appropriate for the Emmy Awards.
What did you think about Natalie Portman's cape?
I just thought it was insufferable.
You thought it was insufferable?
I'm not a giant Natalie Portman fan. We'll start there. But
I'm a huge Natalie Portman. She could wear Batman's cape, but I would have been happy.
I know you would have.
If she wore Batman's cape, I'd be very happy.
I get the protest. That's fine. But then take it all the way. Why didn't you wear it on stage while you were presenting? Like, oh, you know, you didn't want to cover up your dress. So you just wanted to do it on the red carpet. And then you didn't even do a good job of making sure that it was included. You didn't even make Ryan Seacrest talk about it with you on the red carpet. So if you're going to have a protest, have a protest. Like, if you're going to make a statement, make a statement. I don't know. So, like, great. I'm glad you're wearing the cape. No one knew, unless they were reading on Twitter, what it was for. So you need to take your moments. And when you're being interviewed, you need to make sure that it is part of the interview. And if your interviewer doesn't give you the opening, you make an opening.
Are we in agreement about who was best dressed?
Who do you think?
Penelope Cruz.
Well, hands down, 100%. And it's not just because she was wearing my favorite fashion designer. I mean, Chanel is timeless. Timeless elegance.
So many of the best dresses last night were Chanel.
Yeah, which then made me very confused as to why Chanel agreed to dress the abomination that's Billie Eilish. I mean, because that was one of the worst Chanel things I've ever seen.
I don't get Billie Eilish, and that is definitely one of these, like, youth
things. I just don't get it. Like, every time they pander in the audience, she had a sneer on her face. You don't need to be so unaffected all the time. That's exhausting.
Yeah,
just try to you're at the Academy Awards with your green hair, try to be a little bit excited.
What did you think about Brad Pitt's amazing black velvet tuxedo.
Brad Pitt could do no wrong, and you know that. And you were like, oh, was Brad wearing velvet? Someone was. It was crushed black velvet
tuxedo.
Yeah, then that was it. Yes. And what did I say? You're like, why do you have that grin on your face? You can't get over it. To which I replied to you, Prince William did it better in his Hunter Green crushed velvet tuxedo.
It's always about the royals with you.
I know. No, but I was so thrilled to see Brad Pitt win, weren't you? And I think his acceptance speech was a great acceptance speech. It was one of my favorites of the night.
Was it one of my favorites? There were so many in Korean. There was so many in Korean that
I automatically eliminate because I don't. Because you know the translation
isn't what.
So like I can't even. Although I loved when he pointed out all the crew members had them all stand and they got their round of applause and all the cast, like that made my night. And I loved how he kept saying he was going to drink all through the night till the morning. It's like someone taught him that English phrase.
Those were very good. I thought I thought Renee Zellweger's was weird. Like I think she was trying to make a point, but I didn't know.
I was worried if she was maybe on some tranquilizers, and I'm not saying that to be mean, but like was she on some mood stabilizers, and is that why it was like so winding? And she never quite connected the points that she was trying to connect. Do we have an agreement on the worst acceptance speech of the night?
Which one was that?
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix was just so, and I even wrote on Twitter, like his is why I was half joking. I said, Joaquin Phoenix is why people hate Hollywood.
It is.
And it's why Trump wins. And it's just like, for you to literally criticize people for drinking milk,
which is something that doctors tell you to give your children. Right. So like you're going to criticize people for drinking milk. It was
a terrible Hollywood elite speech. And it's and I just find it odd coming from someone who portrayed a role that was basically a fan fantasy for so many disaffected people that would be on the opposite side of where he was at. I mean, I get it that he's an actor and that's what they do is portray characters. Anyhow.
Well, I will give you some good news, though, as a result. Some positives come out of Joaquin Phoenix's speech.
Yes.
I may have ordered you some A5 Wagyu beef as a result of Joaquin's speech.
Just to reaction.
Because all I wanted was a steak after listening to him, so I may have ordered a really good sampler of A5 Wagyu. So just don't pay attention to that gold belly bill when you see it. Just skip it.
You know, the problem is the political discourse out there is becoming, the temperature on it is too high in certain places. And I'm not going to get into the cause of it because I think it's on both sides. I really do.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it's on both sides too.
I don't agree with the moral equivalency of neo-Nazis and Antifa, but I definitely think that when you have a president delivering the State of the Union that he delivered and then the Democrats reacting the way they did, it just is a horrible example for everyone, and it leads us to a situation that took place this weekend in Jacksonville. It's a very minor episode, but it is indicative of what could happen. Well, let's
say, thank God it was a very minor episode.
Yes,
could have been much worse. And so thank God it was very minor. So let's...
A Florida man tried to run down a tent full of people, registering people to vote. They were Trump supporters. It was a Trump victory effort. It was a Duval GOP effort. This person was arrested, but it's a despicable act. And so right now we're going to go, it's a busy week for him, but, we're going to have Joe Gruters who, as we're talking to him, is going to be doing a press conference. I think this is going to be a story that's going to be in the news for a couple of days because this could have gone horribly wrong. Fortunately, it did not, but let's join
Senator Joe Gruters right now for the latest from Jacksonville.
Joining us now from Jacksonville is Joe Gruters. First of all, we are We are really sorry for the events for the weekend. There is no room for that kind of crap. A disturbed young man drove a van through a GOP voter registration tent. Joe is joining us now from Jacksonville. He's about to do a press conference. This will air after that, but we wanted to get you on. Can you give us a sense of not what happened, but your thoughts overall on this kind of bullshit, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, and I appreciate it, Peter. And I'm sure Terry Rizzo would join me in condemning any type of political violence, especially on volunteers, because at the end of the day, our campaigns and our whole society and our country is based on activity, and we want to encourage political expression, and that includes people volunteering. And in this case, we had, you know, some senior citizens really trying to do a voter registration drive here locally. And this obviously demented individual ran through it. And what the craziest thing is, I read some of these online comments and people say it's staged and everything. It's really, but it shows you how much trouble we're in as a country, and how my words of wisdom is to follow the golden rule and treat others the way you want to be treated. And know that although we have political disagreements, at the end of the day, we're successful as a country because we have because we're able to move on and have peaceful transitions, and we have to. But number one, obviously, we're not going to be deterred. In our efforts, these are volunteers, like I said, are the lifeblood of our campaign. We have a lot of energy out there, and we'll just continue on the efforts of not only the volunteers up here in Duval GOP, but it's across the country. I think people will be in across the state of Florida for sure. Our volunteers, we're going to be a lot more vigilant in our efforts to make sure we avoid any type of confrontation that could lead to unfortunate situations like we saw this weekend in Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's just disgusting that anyone would do that. And I think that people need to remember that regardless of what anyone's political views are, oftentimes these are our children. These are, our grandparents, our parents, you know, they are our neighbors. We can disagree all you want, but, you know, oftentimes when I was getting volunteer drives going to do voter registration, I would have high school kids. I would have homeschool kids out there working with the retirees. And it's a beautiful thing. And you don't have to agree with people's political views, but you definitely shouldn't be coming after them. And I think you're right. I think it'll just motivate even more volunteers to turn out, and it'll just increase your efforts, and it'll have the opposite effect of what that deranged person was hoping to.
I met with some of the victims today, and it's a good thing they weren't hurt. There's one senior lady was missed by about 6 inches, and God forbid she would have been hit head on by this van. We have to, as a society, say this is not acceptable. Political violence in any form is unacceptable behavior, no matter which side you're on. And I'm not trying to place blame on the left, because we got to make sure on both sides that we're doing the right thing and trying to make sure we protect our volunteers. But I know from the Republican Party of Florida standpoint, we have so many volunteers out there on a daily basis. And we're certainly undeterred in our efforts to move forward and to try to make sure that all of our volunteers out there have the safety that or feel comfortable that they can do their job without any type of fear out there. But to me, this whole situation is just sad. What's really going on with our country? And I go back to, like I said, treat others the way you want to be treated and move on.
We need to take it down on all sides. I would be remiss if I did not say Matt Schlapp's comments about Mitt Romney and some of the things, you know, where people, anytime you use the words physical safety, and Schlapp came close to that, you know, saying that his Mitt Romney's physical safety could be in danger. That's just, we don't need it. We just don't need it. And
we don't need the rhetoric. You're exactly right, Peter.
Honestly, we don't need speakers. We don't need speakers tearing up speeches. Like, you know, I know.
That did nothing for her party. I don't know what Speaker Pelosi was thinking, because all that did was embolden the right more.
Right.
And it just, and, you know, you're going to see clips of that in so many ad campaigns this election season. She just hurt her own party.
None of that.
She hurt her own cause.
We don't need
any of this. It was unnecessary. It's just stick to what you're supposed to do. Stick to the issues and just do your job.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
And if you don't like what's going on, then go out there and volunteer for the party or the candidates that you believe in and do everything you can and leave it all out there on the field. But don't resort to the flame throwing. Don't resort to violence. That's not what we stand for, and it should be unacceptable no matter where it's coming from. And I hope that we could use this as a learning experience and try to dissuade others from following the same type of action. Like I said, I know we're focused as a party of moving on from this, and we're certainly more charged now than ever to get out there. And it's interesting that the one of the victims in this case, I was just talking with her this morning, and she's telling me she's going right back. That was actually her first day of volunteering. And she's actually going back out today to register more voters. And she's unflinched, and she's moving on and ready to go. So,
all right, we will let you go in a moment. But you have the stage this week in the Florida Senate, the E-Verify bill, which you are. I know Tom Lee is the sponsor of one piece of legislation, but I'm sure you're shuttling behind the scenes on it. You've been kind of the most outspoken advocate for a stricter version of the E-Verify legislation. Where is that going to be at? Where will that be by Wednesday, Thursday of this week?
Well, I know we're going to have some amendments coming out, but here's the bottom line that your listeners have to wonder and question. Is illegal immigration a problem? And if you believe it is a problem, then you should want to turn off the spigot in terms of the incentive for coming over here, which is these jobs. And what happens is when we allow the Florida businesses and employers to hire illegals at a wage rate that's lower than what would be the average rate, it's bad for all Floridians. And it creates that incentive for these people to come over here, to move to Florida. It's my intention, and I think what the governor wants to do is he wants to get rid of the incentive. It will decrease illegal immigration, and I'm hopeful that we can pass the strongest possible version. I don't know, you know, this it has a long way to go, both in the House and the Senate, but I'm advocating, and I'm obviously using the full force of the party to try to encourage my fellow legislators to turn off that spigot, because if you turn off the incentive, we won't have the issue. And in order to get rid of it, this is the easiest way to accomplish that goal. And it's for me, it's a simple solution, but it's going to be a very difficult one as we move to the legislature.
Well, we're going to take a little bit of a left turn here. I know that you last week you met with a friend of mine on legislation to eliminate taxes on diapers. Can you tell us a little bit about that legislation? And I know it passed out of committee, and that you have been helpful.
It's
so we really appreciate that.
Yeah, no worries, Michelle. And I'm glad you guys got involved in that. You know, this is a bill that we heard last year, and it's a bill that will come up in the committee this week that I'm fully supportive of. And it's basically to get rid of the sales tax on certain the diapers and feminine products and other things you would think are normal staples of society that probably we shouldn't be taxing, and trying to encourage people to obviously they're forced to buy it because of the positions there are, either as a baby or as a female. But it's to me, it's just common sense. And I talked to the Senator Book about it. She's optimistic that hopefully we'll move a little bit further this year. And I was visited by a couple of people who are trying to push this. And it, to me, participation in the political process, that's what these guys were. They were volunteers just coming to talk to us about specific bills. And participation in the process works. You can get your point of view heard, and a lot of times people will take action as a result. That's why volunteers are so important to the entire process. We need to continue to encourage volunteers by participating on many different levels on both sides, because the world will continue to be a better place as long as we have people that are engaged and are free to express their views how they see fit.
I mean, you tied of it up right there. We will let you get to your press conference here. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for making time to speak with us, as you have many times on He Said, She Said.
Thanks for the opportunity, guys.
Not to come out of that light, but if we do have that anniversary special episode, we've got to have Joe on, because he's, I think, been, has he been our most frequent guest?
It's either him or Carlos Guillermo Smith.
Or Rob Bradley. I was thinking Rob Bradley's, I think, been on three times, too.
Twice.
Really? I think he's been on three. Maybe.
Did you have him on the bro on a bro episode without me?
I don't know. Oh, we would have to definitely have Reggie on for the broversary.
There's no broversary, though.
Okay.
So yeah, the anniversary is about us, we're good. We don't need, like, you guys can have a broversary in December. Reggie can always come on for an episode without me. That sounds good, because I'll be busy in December. But.
Oh, I have something I want to ask you about.
I wanted to talk.
About December. I just want to get your reaction, because some people, can we do a 25th anniversary screening of Heat, the movie, somewhere, and have people come watch it?
Yeah, that's not a big deal. Well, we have the company that we use, and that's fine.
I think there's a screening room that I want to go to a screening room or something like that.
Oh, you don't want to do it an outside thing with you don't want to go to let's do it at Paul's Landing. And
oh, that'd be fun.
See?
Okay. All right. So put that in here.
Do it my way.
Add it in December.
So you budgeted X and I just budgeted Z.
Yep.
So
Boom.
That's how we do things.
Jimmy Miller, that is going to be our event. You're going to have to come down in December for that. Okay.
Okay. So
go ahead. You had something.
We were talking with Joe about getting out there and the importance of volunteers. I have a little bit of a bone to pick. I am a newly registered Democrat. We have a primary coming up. We haven't had a single canvasser at our house. Not one.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, no.
Well, I'll just lock the gate. Don't worry, babe. But, I mean, really? Democrats are supposed to be
You never got any mail either, right?
Not a single piece of mail. I've gotten nothing. So it's like, I guess you don't want the Republican super voter who's never missed an election, who switched their voter registration to Democrat, to vote for your candidate in the Democratic presidential primary.
If you were a Republican, they would have sent
absolutely
a piece of mail to you by now.
If I was a newly registered Republican, I would have already gotten a piece of mail.
And I mean, and switching parties is like when you're doing it's actually higher.
It's something that you pull.
It's like
it's
a 4/4
scored
voter, because you're you're showing an interest level.
Yeah.
That goes beyond anything, even voter activity.
So I'm just saying I'm a little disappointed, and everybody talks about how, you know, great the organizing is on the Democratic Party, and I have experienced the opposite thus far.
Real quick, we have so much on this pod. Tuesday, this will pop after it probably happens. Who's going to win New Hampshire? Is it going to be Bernie Bros or Mayor Pete?
Mayor Pete, please, please, for the love of Pete, Mayor Pete. I cannot stomach a Bernie bro.
It's going to be Bernie.
Do we know who won Iowa yet?
Mayor Pete by one delegate.
Yes. See, guys, I stopped following because it just.
I think you're going to have Bernie. The problem is, what is Joe Biden going to do? I mean, Joe Biden is. He is. It's
Where's
worse
his firewall?
It was supposed to be South Carolina, the third state. But, you know, Tom Steyer is cutting into it, and they're saying, you know, after New Hampshire, if he finishes, he could finish fifth. There are some, you know, people that are saying that Klobuchar, because of her strong debate performance Friday night, will get ahead of
Biden.
There
are people who really love Klobuchar. I don't know who they are, but...
Klobmentum. That's who we're going to be done to when it's going to be Bernie and Pete and...
Then I'll be with Pete all day long.
Will you?
Yes.
Okay. I may be with Klobuchar because I believe a woman should be president. speaking of powerful women...
Yeah, let's have on a powerful woman.
One of the, this is a...
Powerful women with the initial of a K.
Right. I mean, segue.
That's the only thing I can get in common between these two. That's it.
We are going to bring on a new guest to the pod. she recently, and it's important to explain to those who don't follow Florida politics. So we elect our legislative leaders many years in advance. So we have Bill Galvano as the president now. Then for 2 years, Wilton Simpson will be the Senate president. After Wilton Simpson will be, assuming that Republicans hang on to the chamber, will be the our next guest, who is Kathleen Pasadomo of Naples. She's wrapped up a very inter-party, high intrigue, off the radar battle to win that. And so she instantly becomes one of the most important people in Florida politics, because you really are powerful as you are rising. So like right now, Wilton Simpson is almost at the zenith of his power, will be for the next year and a half. And then at the end of his session, you kind of fall off a little bit as the next ascending leader, which will be Kathleen Pasadomo. So she's the majority leader now, and is going to be one of the big players. I think we will have her on many times to the pod over the next couple of years.
And we should probably say this ended up being a shorter interview than we had anticipated, because we had a little bit of a sound engineering issue. We recorded a whole great long interview with her, and there was a problem, and the sound engineer had to come in and fix it, and we had to re-record. And it being legislative session, she only had so much time to go. So we will definitely have her back on and go more in depth later on some other things. But let's, for some of our listeners, let's introduce them to
Kathleen Pasadomo. Joining us now is one of the rising powers in the Florida Senate, Senator Kathleen Pasadomo of Naples. She, late last year, wrapped up the kind of intramural scrum to become Senate president after Senate President Designate Wilton Simpson takes his turn. But right now, she's focused on the legislative session at hand. Senator, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. It seems like this is kind of like moving week. We're at the midpoint of session. Could you give us just a little sense of where one of the hot button issues is? And that's E-Verify. I think that that's going to come up for a vote, but you probably know more about what's going on behind the scenes. Where is that issue right now?
Well, my understanding is that Senator Lee, Senator Simmons, and the president are working on the bill and with staff, and are coming and will come up with something that is workable, that is supportable, and I think it's going to be unveiled in its first committee this week.
Okay, and then overall, everybody seems to be in a good mood up in Tallahassee. I've spent the last 2 weeks up there, but that's me delivering Girl Scout cookies to all the people that order them through Ella Joyce. So people seem to be nice to me.
Everybody likes their cookie dealer.
They do. I mean, it's bipartisan that they like. A lot of that, but people kept saying, even like some appropriation lobbyists, they said things seem to be on track with the budget, that Rob Bradley, Travis Cummings seemed to be, behind the scenes, everything was moving along pretty quickly. Obviously, that can blow up at any point. But what's your sense of where the budget is right now?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think Senator Bradley and Representative Cummings, as in partners for the last 2 years, have worked together. Of course, we're $1 billion apart, so that'll have to be reconciled. If you look at the proposed budget in both the House and the Senate, there's a lot of what the governor's asked for. The agency's budget requests are taken into consideration, and we're in a good place this year, and I think we will finish on time.
Do you have any local issues that are important to you that you're carrying this session?
Well, in terms of the budget, I do have some funding requests, and in terms of legislation, I'm carrying one bill, which is unusual for me, and that is changes to Florida's guardianship law, because my whole focus this session is, as majority of you, is to make sure everyone else is successful in whatever their endeavors are.
You know, is it me or being majority leader, I don't want to say it's too easy right now, but gosh, 8 or 10 years ago, there was a lot more inter-party battles. I mean, you and Senator Simpson have just, everybody seems to get along so well right now. It just, I miss, there's not as many fun stories to write about. you know, you guys.
You know, here's why. We acknowledge that every single one of us were elected by our constituents to represent them. And so when you think about it, even though we have a diverse membership in the Senate and we have different policies and really different politics, we do all have the same goal, and that is to make sure that we represent our constituents. And that's why we don't fight about too much. There's only one or two hot button issues that have come up that divide us. Other than that, 98% of the bills we pass in a bipartisan manner together.
I'll be honest, like even a contentious issue like parental consent, which was last week, that passed. I don't know. It seemed like that was even a dignified. There wasn't the flame throwing that you would see, and we might even see it still in the House. But it just seemed like it was a fair and honest debate about the issue. It moved. You knew it was going to move. It had the votes, but it just seemed like a respectful process, even on a contentious issue like that one.
Well, that's something that we all work at, both Democrats and Republicans, and we do respect one another. We respect each other's talents, and we actually listen to one another. And you can see a lot of the bills that we pass will have a prime co-sponsor and a sponsor that are from either party, and that's all deliberate by design because we want to get things done, and we don't want to be compared to Washington.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference here. I just keep trying to, it's something I talk about being a Florida Republican, being part of the state government here. You know, in fact, when I talk to candidates about them running, I say it's better to be one of 23, 24 in the Republican Senate than it is to be one of 200 in the U.S. House. You may think you're more powerful in the U.S. Congress, but I think, I'd rather be a Jeff Brandis. I'd rather be a Joe Gruters than be John Rutherford or something like that.
I mean, I'd rather be a Kathleen Pasadomo.
I'd rather be a Kathleen Pasadomo, too.
I mean, honey.
Yeah, I heard you're in touch with your feminine side. That's okay.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And those of us who are serving in the state legislature feel that very, very much because we know we can make a big difference. And it doesn't take a lot. In Washington, it seems like a monumental task to do anything, whereas we can get things done on a state and local level and really make a huge difference in the lives of our citizens. And that's what we're here for.
All right. So we know you've got a busy we always schedule these and we forget that they've got committee meetings to go to and so forth. But for our Ella Joyce, who sees, you know, looks up to, you know, in fact, the first person who Ella met in the Capitol was Lizbeth Beniquisto when she was majority leader. And Lizbeth brought her in. Do you remember that when she was a baby?
She used to go and play in Lizbeth's office. Lizbeth had great toys.
Yeah, it was an amazing moment for us.
And she'd go to Dana Young's office for diaper changes.
Well, bring her by.
We will.
Bring her by. Next time we visit the Capitol, bring her by. I'd be happy to see her.
Well, we appreciate that. We hope you have a great rest of session.
Thank you. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator.
A lot of people give their opinions on politics and not just the talking heads on cable news. Everyone has an opinion. Sometimes a gentleman's wager can be the best way to tell how much someone believes their own spin. That's why you should check out what Predict It is doing. Predict It is like the stock market, but for politics. Instead of buying and selling oil futures, you can buy and sell shares in everything from who the Democratic nominee will be to if the president will be impeached. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He Said, She Said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predictit.org/promo/FLAPOL.
You know who's going to be very happy about that is Jenna, one of our favorite, you know, friends of the pod. She's going to be very happy that Naples was represented. You know, we're going to be Southwest Florida is where all the action is right now with all the elections, like because Rooney is Francis Rooney has retired. That created all the domino effects. And so we've got like 7 or 8 races going on right there.
I miss Jenna writing, working for us.
I know. Bring her back.
Jenna, come back. Please.
We need you. We need
Sorry, Naples Chamber of Commerce or whatever it's called.
We need your strong, funny leads. Although Jacob Ogles is killing it for us there, covering all of the races of Southwest Florida. And it's kind of awesome having a reporter there. Nobody else does, like Politico, News Service. They don't have reporters on the ground. And so we continue to...
Jacob is killing it. He pops up in my feed all of the time. And, you know, I have a very different algorithm than yours. So to pop up in mine is...
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You
have, he seeps through the Royals coverage. I don't know how. But...
I got to talk to you. I know we're going to go to our favorite interview for the day, but I got to talk to you a couple things.
Okay, let's go.
Number one, The Crown, it's ending.
It's ending. After 5 seasons, originally it was supposed to be 6. So this is kind of disappointing to a lot of us.
Will they have the Diana crash or not on it?
That is what everybody is a little bit disappointed at. It looks like that's probably where it's going to end about. And so people are a little bit upset that that's where they're going to end stuff off at. Do you think that they're ending it early because they hope to that Netflix just doesn't want to rock the boat with Meghan Markle?
I hadn't thought about that. It is, I think it also comes down to a matter of budget. And they've got, you know, The Crown's never going to go away for them. Like, it'll be interesting as the streaming model goes forward. You know,
they could bring it back, right? They could say, oh, we're only doing 5 seasons. And then a few years down the line, be like, all right, like, do they bring it back when Elizabeth passes?
I guess more to
I'm
my
not
point
hoping
is
for her,
like,
too, by the way. Like, God,
so you had
queen,
a show going like Seinfeld, and then it went into syndication. We really, yes, we have syndication still now, obviously, but it's not the same concept. I wonder how these streaming shows are going to syndicate themselves. And so I think that that's part of the economics of it. Netflix, one of the big losers out of the Oscars, by the way.
It really
24
was.
24 awards. And it kind of sucks. They continue to get nominated, They're producing quality stuff, but they cannot break through. You know that there are some old
people
guard,
are just not voting for their stuff. You know that's why The Irishman got completely shut out, right?
Well, and I go back and forth with it. It's not a great, great film. I don't think. I'm
really proud of you for finally saying that.
No, I went through. It's not great. To it's great. To every time I watch Casino and Goodfellas, I'm like, these are great films.
They are, and I enjoyed those films.
This one is. I don't.
I did watch 45 minutes of The Irishman, to be very clear. So that's the most I watched out of any of the films.
I'm glad the makeup gimmick was not awarded. I don't like the de-aging thing for what it represents. And I'm glad, like, it was nominated for visual effects. I'm glad that they did not win for any of that. And my God, Al Pacino, skin. I mean,
honestly, like, you can get liver spots lasered off.
Jesus, you've got all that money.
You know what, though? I will say visual effects, though. That award presentation was probably the funniest of the night. Having James Corden and Rebel Wilson come out in Cats costumes and saying that as members of the cast of Cats, we know how important visual effects are for a film. That was one of the highlights of the night, probably. That was really funny. I like it when the film industry can make fun of itself.
Rebel Wilson's hilarious. She's hilarious. James Corden... My hot take. I have 2 hot takes right now.
Let's go. Hot takes.
Number one, Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies are overrated.
How dare you?
They are not as... I mean, tagalongs are better. Samoas are better.
I'm going to be honest with you. I cannot stand a tagalong.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. I think tagalongs taste like wax.
I don't like anything that has shortbread in it. So I like...
Oh, and that's the original Girl Scout cookie. And that's mine and Ella's favorite.
Number
we love
2,
the trefoil.
James Corden, like the karaoke and Cars thing.
Yeah, I'm not into it.
I'm just... I don't think it's like unbelievable. Like people... Oh my God, it's Lin-Manuel Miranda doing that. And I'm like, no, this is karaoke. Here's my other hot take. I've never really liked karaoke though. So like, I don't think... Like, karaoke is a great, like, idea or program.
I agree with you. I don't either.
It's just, like, I never really enjoy, like, when you're going to a bar and, like, you hear people belting out Neil Diamond. Like, it's just not enjoyable to me.
It's only fun at bachelorette parties.
Here's something else I wanted to bring up. I know you said I'm not allowed to talk about it, but
what?
It's the scariest news of the week. Transformers and My Little Pony are doing a crossover event.
No one cares.
I think
no
it was,
one cares.
I thought it was just in. Here's the synopsis. In My Little Pony, Transformers. The
no one cares. No one cares.
Just stop.
Just stop.
Just stop right
just
now.
Just stop. No one cares. If they do, you can go find them in Dorks R Us chat room and talk all about
who
it.
Who is the target audience on that? You know who they are? The bronies.
No.
Remember the
bronies? I don't even think bronies would like it.
Because, really?
Yeah, I don't think bronies are into Transformers. I have no idea who the target audience is. Like, maybe, like, parents of boy-girl twins, and they need something that both of the kids will like at the same time. I have no clue.
Well, speaking of great parents, our next guest is one of our favorite, is one half of one of our favorite parenting sets, and is also a top operator in the political process, Alia Faraj Johnson, who recently started her own firm after being at Hill & Knowlton. This is one of our favorite people overall.
Yeah.
Somebody I talk to all the time, somebody that your social media.
One of our favorite kids.
One of our favorite kids. We see them when we're in Tallahassee. And so it's a long time coming. I can't believe we've taken this long to get on. Like everybody else, she's a little compressed for time. Getting these interviews during sessions a little bit tough, but we do get to talk to her about a few things. So here is our friend, Alia Faraj Johnson. Joining us now is one of our favorite people. Are you going to jump in here? Or are you?
You were in the middle of a sentence. Oh. Why would you stop in the middle of a sentence?
It's one of our amazing favorite people.
I know, but like you were, took it.
This is somebody, this is like Facebook friend, but then became our real good friend. And then like we track her life and hopefully she follows us.
Listen, I know that you probably have a reason why that you have her on, but I just want to know how Peyton did in her first 18-hole golf tournament. So joining us now is our good friend.
Alia Faraj Johnson. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on. And Peyton did extremely well. This was 36 holes. That was over 2 days.
Wow.
Her first. You know, 18 holes per day, which, you know, is a lot for an 11-year-old, but she plowed through. She did better on her second day. So we're very proud of her. She came in third. So
that's amazing.
Excited.
Yeah, that's a lot to be proud of for sure. That is a really long weekend for an 11-year-old. I mean, that's a long weekend for mom and dad, yeah. too.
Actually, it was longer for Rob since he was the, hashtag daddy caddy.
He was the daddy caddy.
I was going to ask because I saw him in the photos. Caddy. And so he's right there doing that.
Yeah.
The whole time too, right?
Yeah. In her age group, they're allowed to have their parents or a guardian caddy for them. So they have the push cart and they have to walk the 18 holes. And if you've ever played at Glen Arvin, which is a beautiful, beautiful club and course in Thomasville, Georgia, they have hills. Very steep hills. So there's a lot of.
So Rob got a good workout.
What are hills, by the way? Because I'm not sure about those here in Florida.
Well, you know, you've seen them in Portugal.
Right.
Yeah.
We love the photos.
Yeah, very, very exciting.
It's just like there's something remarkable about, I guess, the individualism of Peyton, like, and we see it with Ella when she's doing horseback riding that, you know, this isn't a team sport, that she's got to motivate herself, that she's got to find it within herself to, you know, she's competing essentially against herself before she's doing anything else.
She truly is, Peter. She's actually so hard on herself, but she's so composed on the golf course, which we recently heard from Florida State University's coach Jones, and he was phenomenal. And he said, as they continue to monitor the up and coming golfers, what they look at when they're playing is not how well they hit the ball, but how they handle themselves when they're in the sand trap, in the bunker, in the rough, and how they recover from their bad shots. And I found that to be really interesting. And I saw Peyton nodding when he was saying this at one of our, you know, finale events. And I'm very proud of her because she holds it together.
The thing about Ella Joyce, she's not hard on herself going in. Like, she doesn't say she wants to be number one, but then on the back end, she very much wants to know what she needs to do the next time to succeed. Like, I remember that on Dance, and I remember that here, like, she on Horse. Like, she's not like crazy, like, if I don't win first place, that's the end of the world. But on the back end.
No, but that's her goal. Her goal is to win first place. And so when she doesn't, if she doesn't get it, she wants to know what she can do to get better. And
that's, you know what? It pushes her.
It does.
That's
it pushes
exactly. And it's so important. I mean, I really think it's important. We, you know, are very candid with Peyton. You know, we tried to sort of break down what she could have done better. And, you know, like, the greens were really fast at this course. They were beautiful. And so we're practicing today. I mean, I'm picking her up after school and we're heading right to the golf course so she could work on her putts because it's the short game. And so I see that in Ella because I you know, track her on Facebook and watch her. She's jumping and you know, how she's taken to horseback riding, which I think is remarkable.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we are very thrilled with her dedication to that sport. It's, you know, I feel like it's so important, especially for our girls who are only children, to have, you know, these opportunities to really push themselves against some standards that are already defined. And yes, they're competing with themselves, but it forces them to, you know, better themselves, which is a good character building.
Well, that's what
exercise.
We all have. I mean,
competition's good.
It is. It is.
It's remarkable what we have in common that, you know, you've got two people or you've got two sets of couples here that are both in the process. Although Michelle is out of it, she was more experienced certainly than I was. In fact, that's another thing in common that we are in relationships where the woman is the star. And then we have only
he's
children.
So sweet, isn't he? I pay him. Lots of kisses.
We have and we have only children. And so it's just, I don't know. That's what we've always I think that's why we talk so often. So let's talk about you for a second, Alia, because I think, you know, for our audience, everybody's known that you're a top comms operator, but you've hung out your own shingle now, which is a big change for you. And
yeah, congratulations.
So tell us about
that.
We're
very excited for you.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you. It's been really exciting. It's a lot of work when you're starting out on your own, as I'm sure you both know that. But I have been so blessed and so fortunate that I've been so busy. And, you know, session makes everything even busier because it's fast paced, as you both know, and you're trying to keep up. And now I'm doing it on my own. I actually have a few people that are helping me out because I did not expect to be so busy so quickly. So it's wonderful. And I love the flexibility it's giving me. Most days I try to pick Peyton up from school and spend a little time with her before I jump back into work. So it's great.
That is, people often ask me, how is your husband able to be at so much stuff with you and Ella? And I'm like, because he, for the most part, can set his own schedule and he prioritizes, just like it sounds like you do, you know, trying to pick Peyton up and spend that time is important to you. So you might start your day earlier than you need to so you can take that break. Or, you know, you'll go later into the night so you can have that time. But it's nice to have that flexibility. You don't need to be bound to the standard 9 to 5 that so many people are trapped in.
And, you know, and homework is a lot. And thankfully, I have a mom who is a great, great teacher. And so she will help me out with Peyton and thankfully does math with her. So thank you, Governor DeSantis, for readdressing Common Core. Not that it was not a good thing, but it was just a little tough. So I'm happy to hear that we're moving away from Common Core and perhaps looking for more common sense ways to address education.
I was curious what your thoughts were on that. So it's,
as a former Jebby,
as a former Jeb person, it's but.
Or as a lifelong Jeb person who formerly worked for.
That's a more accurate description. But like, look, you, I can't wait to see how, I can't wait to see how my daughter's private school responds to that, because I really can't wait for Common Core math to be a thing of the past.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think that the thought and the idea was that, you know, you would teach children how to do things in several different ways. I'm really all about the analytical thinking and teaching them how to do that. But I feel that sometimes if a child knows how to do math the old-fashioned way, dare I say that, then let them do it the way they understand it, as opposed to breaking down the number in six different ways. So I think that the evolution of Common Core will still have the strong standards, but I feel that it will be a little bit more common sense.
All right, so now that you have hung out your own shingle, I think it's important to note, I mean, you landed a very visible in your first round of clients. You're the comms person right now for the Florida GOP, which is a wonderful job, because it probably can never pay as much as the work you will end up doing, because it's such a high profile position. I mean, you're getting we had the incident over the weekend about the lunatic.
Oh, I know. That was horrible and tragic, you know, and unexpected. I actually was on the golf course with Peyton when I got word of that. And that's where you have to juggle. So I was able to work on, developing the responses. I stayed in touch with the chairman, the executive director. Also, it was just a little shocking and surprising, but we were so relieved that nobody was injured. I think that was one of the first questions I asked. Did anybody get injured?
We'll talk about that for a second. How do you work? I think people that we have on, something I'd like to know more about, like, I don't know, any tricks of the trade? I mean, do you wake up and go at it? Are you nighttime? You a morning person?
I am a morning person. I get up early. We'll look at the clips. I absolutely look at sunburn. It's the first thing I look at. And then I'm in mom mode, getting Peyton out of the house. Rob will take her to school, and then I will sit down and just continue working. Most of the times, even through lunch, unless I'm downtown and at the Capitol. And then into the early evening, but I like to keep, I really like to shut it down if I can between 8:30 and 9:30, which is the time that, you know, I like to keep aside for Peyton.
That's about where.
Yeah, that's about where Peter likes to keep his schedule, yeah, too.
I try to, especially now that I'm in dry January, into dry February.
It's February now. You've got to stop calling it dry January. You're sober curious at this point.
I am sober curious.
You're sober curious is what
it's
you are.
It's just so trendy that I can't not do it. Like, it's just, it's so on brand to try something this, I just can't wait to start, like, going to, like, those, like, fake bars and, like, ordering, like, mocktails and things.
We're never
like
doing those things.
Why?
Yeah. So just, that's not happening. We're not going to mocktail bars.
Can I get an apricot spritzer?
I mean, I couldn't get you to a mocktail bar when I was pregnant with Ella. I'm not going to a mocktail bar now.
Do they have mock champagne?
It's sparkling cider?
You know,
cider?
I do that quite a bit when I do that quite a bit when I'm out and about. You know, I'll have, like, a soda water with a lime, and it just looks like a drink.
Yes. Because, like, I don't want to, you don't need to always have a drink in your hand. Peter said, Adam Street is much different when you're sober. And he's like, people are so loud. Was I that loud? I'm like, absolutely, you were that loud. I can't believe it.
The whole town up there is just so different when you're drinking that club soda. Like, you just want to tell people, like, I've heard that story 7 times already from you. Please, please stop.
So what issues are you paying attention to this session? I mean, I know that Peter is paying attention to people's drinking habits, but what issues are you paying attention to? I mean, I feel like this is kind of like, it's a quiet session because stuff is kind of just moving along. So what should people be looking for?
There's a few issues that I personally am watching because I'm, you know, very invested in what they're doing. Vacation rentals, you know, working with Airbnb and some of the other vacation rental organizations that are supporting legislation that would create some uniformity in the state. So that's been, you know, very interesting and, you know, fast paced, and it moves quickly. It's been a few sessions now. Also working on something that is really near and dear to my heart now is the autonomous practice for APRNs. I represent the CRNA, that is the Certified Registered Nurse Anesthetists. And they are very specialized and highly trained. And so that is an issue that is a priority of Speaker Oliva's. So we are definitely hoping that this will be the year, that 2020 will be the year of the nurse.
What, and what do you mean when you say you're hoping it'll be the year of the nurse?
I hope that they will pass the legislation that Representative Pigman has been sponsoring now for several years that will give them the ability to practice to the full extent of their training and education without physician supervision. Not many people realize how important a role CRNAs play during surgeries. When you walk into that surgery room or that operating room, it is the CRNA that is with you from the moment they administer anesthesia to when you come out of anesthesia, working collaboratively with the surgeon. So what we are asking for, or they're asking for, is to be able to do that without having to have a physician signing off on the protocols that they use, or giving them the autonomy to do this in VA clinics, in rural areas where they usually don't even have an anesthesiologist.
Okay.
It's a contentious, like it is.
I will say I have never had a CRNA. I have only ever had an anesthesiologist when I have undergone anesthesia. So that it's an interesting issue to hear about. And when you say
it is
in rural areas, yeah, they might not have access because to that. And so if that's the only way they are getting access to.
When, I mean, it is like anytime you get into scope of practice, that is like
it's a slippery slope. Anytime you get into scope of practice,
it's what Tallahassee runs on. I mean, it's you basically you have the FMA and the doctors, and you know they have they have the status quo, and they don't want to give up any inch of that.
Oh, I'm aware of how this works. But for our listeners, thank you for mansplaining it to me.
No. I wasn't mansplaining to you.
Okay, because you're looking at me and making like hand movements. I'm like, oh, I know that I know that.
I was mansplaining to the audience. There's a difference.
Perfect.
Like there are people, are average.
I know.
No, we have people that are not in politics and they want to know what is scope of practice. So I'm sorry for mansplaining to our audience. Thank you for, you know. Well, and people don't, like. I went into a procedure last week. I did not see a doctor. I only saw a nurse practitioner. People want to know. They don't know why. I don't think people, the average person, knows why that came to be in the first place or why it doesn't come to be.
Yeah.
Or why, like.
You're right. The average person doesn't realize that.
Like when they call me MD, why do you have to designate that you're in Florida? Why can't I do things? Why, you know, and so I think that there are.
Telemedicine is the greatest invention,
but
that's only
changed over the last couple of years. Like, and so
correct.
I had a weird one.
I think this is.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Michelle.
No, you're fine, Alia. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this is exactly what Speaker Oliva was emphasizing, that as we continue to grow, our population continues to grow in the state of Florida. We need to also look for ways to modernize our healthcare, providing more access, removing obstacles. And I think this is one of the many, big ideas that the speaker has that, you know, we're working toward.
But people feel safe.
To healthcare.
People do want their doctor to be there in all situations, Alia. Otherwise, I'm going to be getting a call after this podcast from somebody out of Jupiter, Florida. His name may be Tim Stapleton, but
listen, they can come on and give their case on another episode.
Oh, and here, let's give a little shout out right now. Can you all please pass the instant flu test?
Oh, please. Can people go to CVS and get swabbed for the strep or the flu? I mean, I do not need to go to my primary care physician.
Jeez,
I don't even need a primary care physician.
Get
this
that.
It's ridiculous.
Bill. It is amazing. Like, you go on MeMD, and so. It's just
there you go, Michelle.
It is
right?
An amazing.
When I take Peyton in, I see a physician's assistant or an APRN.
Yeah,
and And I'm so happy they are so accessible, you know, whether I call it in or whether I take her in, to make sure she's okay, that it's not, you know, something worse than just the common cold. So I really appreciate the role that they play in, and I think it's a collaborative relationship.
And you know, I took it a step further. I started using, we still have a traditional pediatrician. We go in and we love our pediatrician, but sometimes it's not convenient to get into their office. So there is a Blueberry Pediatrics. It's a service. It's telemedicine for kids. And like you sign up and it's in Florida and they send you stuff. They have like a scope that attaches to your iPhone so they can see in your kid's ear. They can see your kid's throat.
Oh, wow.
And so like Ella woke up not feeling good on Saturday morning. My doctor wasn't open. So I initiated an appointment and I had a prescription called into the pharmacy within 30 minutes of Ella being awake. And so that's all changes too, right?
Can
and
I ask
stuff
you,
that wouldn't have been able to be done.
Can
years
I jump
ago.
In and Go ask ahead, one question in. Real quick? What did you think about Parasite winning the Academy Award last night for the Oscar?
You're such a jerk. It's the one thing we weren't talking about.
I just wanted to
you
know, did you
did
like...
that because of what I told you. I think it's remarkable that a foreign film with subtitles won the Oscar, and I can't wait to watch it.
Okay.
I love subtitles.
I know it's committee week and that you got to get going. We're going to ask you one question. We're going to put you on the spot.
When's your next Disney cruise, and can we come with you?
Yeah, exactly. That's my question.
I knew it. So I had to steal it from you.
Well, Peyton has been trying to plan a Disney cruise, so I'm not sure it'll be for spring break because we are going to the Players. So we will.
Oh,
not
wow.
have
that'll
that
be a
that
great spring trip. That'll be a great spring break.
Oh, she loves it. She gets to meet all the players, and they sign her flag, and she just gets to watch them in action. So it's really exciting. So,
do you guys get an Airbnb for that?
Some dates.
You do get an Airbnb.
No, actually.
Oh.
No, actually, we're not.
But in case they get sick out there, maybe they could go and go to the an ARNP and get if something were to happen, right? I'm just tying it all together.
Yeah,
never
you're tying it all together. Yeah.
Let's hope we stay healthy. Okay?
Yeah, stay healthy. We want to go on a Disney cruise with you. Let's book sometime. We will go whenever you all want to go.
And we will let you get, we know that you have committee meetings to get to, so we will let you go. Thank you for letting us take your time during busy session.
Thank you. Thank
Say
you
hi to
both.
Rob.
Thank you, Michelle, and thank you, Peter.
We all know that guy who says he knew Trump was going to win long before election night. Had he known about Predict It, he could have put his money where his mouth was and made a little extra cash in the process. Predict It is like the stock market for politics. You can buy and sell shares in future events and elections, both foreign and domestic. During the 2018 midterms, Predict It beat other national pollsters like Nate Silver in election night predictions, and it wasn't even close. It's easy and only costs a few bucks to get started. He Said, She Said listeners can get a special introductory offer by visiting predictit.org/promo/FLAPOL.
All right, so we've covered New Hampshire, we covered Florida legislature, we covered the Oscars. Happy Valentine's Day to you. This is going to be, or happy Valentine's Day this week. I've always thought this is an odd holiday for you and I because we got together on March 3rd, 4th, that's the anniversary of us getting together. And so we had just... We missed Valentine's Day.
We did.
And so St. Patrick's Day was our first Valentine's Day.
It was our first holiday.
Or it was our first holiday together, which back
in the
day.
And that's the only one that we ever celebrated because the first one's the only one we ever celebrated because the second one, I was pregnant.
Right.
Yeah.
Didn't we celebrate St. Patrick's Day with Ailish?
No, you know what? We didn't even celebrate it because I was working on the F-35. Our first, and we had to go, the Tampa Chamber of Commerce had their annual military dinner, and I had the cockpit demonstrator at the Tampa Waterside Marriott for that event. So yeah, okay. That's right. We had never celebrated of St. Patrick's Day until it was like, I want to say it was like Ella was five when we finally did it. And we were like, oh, this is gross. Why do people do this? And that was it.
And so Valentine's Day is like, it's just been it's outside of the 100 days of Shorsh. It's not spring breakish. And so, but I know I would be remiss if I didn't say I loved you on our special Valentine's Day edition of He Said, She Said.
Do we have a gift guide for people for Valentine's Day? I mean,
call David Santos,
At Diamonds Direct. He's not an advertiser, I promise. We don't even get a discount.
No, I don't know why people haven't called him. But I think
I do need to remember to take that picture. And David did promise Ella that he would put her on the wall of celebrities in the bathroom. and I keep forgetting to take in a photo for him to frame and hang up in there. I want her right next to Kristen Cavallari.
On that note, thank you for joining us for another edition of He Said,
She Said.